right. Well, here we are. To dream again. To dare again. To feel enjoyment and happiness again. Or for the first time. To realize this is living. Be inspired. To see your life as an exciting journey of discovery. With your host of the Inspire Possibility Show, Mark Sussman.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Sussman. You are listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, the show that makes a difference, the show that will hopefully inspire you to think in a different way and perhaps do things that you put on the back burner or things you never even considered, and perhaps even exceed your expectations and to create a new way of being, a new reality. And, you know, in all my travels, everybody that I run into throughout the years, there's always this thing about religion and spirituality. And then we have the conversation about science and faith and religion and all of that kind of stuff. And so when I got the email from the publicist for the book Proof of God with authors Ptolemy Tompkins and Bernard Haish, I said, okay, I want to have a conversation with them. And that's who I have, Bernard Haish, on the line with me. And he's actually something of an anomaly. He's a respected and accomplished scientist. He's an astrophysicist who believes firmly and fervently in the existence of God. Many scientists disdain faith, as there's no empirical evidence of any of it, and many Christians fear science, which they believe contradicts their beliefs. But the truth that Bernie argues in this book is that you can't understand the universe without acknowledging that the evidence of God is clear in the very makeup of our world. Science and faith are of the same coin. Now, this isn't the first book that Bernie has written, and he's written several others. He's also an editor of the Astrophysical Journal. And so, Bernard Haish, welcome to the Inspire Possibility Show.
Well, it's certainly my pleasure to be here today.
And I'm, as I said, I'm really looking forward to your thoughts regarding Proof of God. Does your book actually, are you saying that your book proves that God exists?
Well, I guess that depends somewhat on the readership. You know, if I were going for a really hardcore atheist audience, I doubt if I'd really make much headway there. But if you look at the evidence that I put in the book with an open mind, I think you'll come away pretty convinced that there's a really strong argument for the existence of God.
And so I guess when I was reading over the materials that are in your from the publicist, a lot of people have different concepts of what God is, and I know especially in the Judeo-Christian religion is that the idea of this image of this man sitting in the sky with a beard, and that it's a all-powerful being that has lots of powers. Is that kind of what you're indicating?
Well, I think that's probably the biggest obstacle to believing in God for people who are, you know, look at the world intelligently, is that these images of God is something like a superhuman being living out there somewhere.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It's totally illogical. The kind of God that I talk about in the book that I think is a legitimate picturing of God is a great disembodied intelligence, something that is conscious, is consciousness itself, consciousness and infinite characteristics. It's a very, very abstract sort of God, but I think one that gives rise to people and to living things throughout the universe, the kind of experience what reality is from these different points of view and bring that knowledge back to God, the infinite intelligence, the infinite consciousness.
Mm-hmm. So the question I have is, I guess the reason I ask that is that in your materials, when you you talk about His, God is a His, and which indicated to me you're thinking of it as a being, and you're mm-hmm. saying that's not what you're indicating.
No, I mean, that His is simply a matter of grammatical convenience, because if you have to write He, She, It every time He would be used in classical grammar, it just gets very tedious. So, you know, I apologize to the women who might find any kind of it's not even a slur.
Right.
It's just a convenience, that's all. It's really a convenience.
Okay.
God is sort of male, female, nothing at all.
So So if I understand you correctly, then what you're saying is, when you talk proof of God, you're not thinking of God as this all-powerful being.
Well, I think of God as being an all-powerful, all-knowing, all-loving intelligence. An intelligence that probably is the same as consciousness.
Right, but what I want to so we're on the same page then. So it's not really necessarily this supreme being.
Well, I think
it's more of a consciousness.
Well, I think it is a supreme consciousness. It's the top of the list. It's God is, I think, something that's to a large extent beyond our comprehension, because
right.
He is a disembodied, all perfect, all whatever. Entity, a thing that really...
I know, but I guess, yeah, what I was saying, where a lot of people get hung up is they are raised with this idea of this all-powerful being that, you know, can do all kinds of stuff and makes the world go around, creator of the world. And so I'm still a little unclear. Are you saying that's not what you mean by proof of God, that it's an all-powerful being?
I think of God as being an all-powerful intelligence / consciousness.
Right, right.
Not anything.
So then, So what you're saying is, it's an intelligence. So for a lot of people, that's a big thing. When they think of God, they have this visceral reaction because they're raised with this idea again that it was a person. So you're saying that it's not a person. It's a creative intelligence.
That's right. If you look at the what we have here, a universe that we live in, if God were inside that universe, then you could legitimately ask, well, who made the universe then? You know, what's God doing in the universe? We need something that is great enough to cause the origin of the universe to take place. You know, we know that the Big Bang occurred 14 billion years ago. Well, you know, if God created a universe, that's a good way to do it in a Big Bang. But sure, that's well beyond the capacity, you know, some gray-bearded and crotchety fella up in the sky.
So let me just take this one step at a time. So what we're talking about is, when you say proof of God, what you're talking about is a supreme consciousness, a creative force.
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
Okay. So and that's what you refer to as God.
Yes.
And so when you talk about the world coming into being, what you're saying is there was this creative force that caused the world to come into being, whether it was the Big Bang or some other theory.
Yes, that's correct, yes.
Yeah. And then what about this idea of I know there's this other debate of was it creative design, creative intelligence?
Intelligent design.
Yeah. And what is that? How does that fit into your thoughts? Is that kind of what you're saying, that this creative energy was this intelligent design that created this universe? I mean, that's really what you're talking about. I think there's a creative force that created the universe, and that creative force you refer to as God. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes, it is, but I want to make sure, or make clear, rather, that I'm not advocating intelligent design as the, this is sort of an academic and political kind of movement to...
Right.
And I want to stay away from that, because although the God that I'm postulating has certainly similar characteristics as being a being that is not made of matter, it's not confined to
right.
universe, but that it can make universes. On the other hand,
right.
I believe in evolution, an evolution advocate, because I think that's That's a very
right. Let me just clarify one thing. I think that what gets in a lot of the discussion again about God is this idea of this person thing. But I think, and I'm kind of the school of that there's this, you know, higher intelligence, whatever, you know, I think which we're saying the same thing. There's this higher intelligence, and that kind of, but does that higher intelligence have any role in let's say an individual's life? I mean, sometimes people say, well, if you act a certain way, God will punish you. I mean, and what I'm hearing you say is that that's not true.
That's
you don't believe that.
That's true. The reason I say that is because we ourselves are offshoots of God. I think that this intelligence, this consciousness, wishes to
right.
experience his ability, his/her creative ability, and to do so, he creates a universe, or maybe many universes, and then he enters into those universes as living beings. And so in that sense, we are little sparks of God, who is the great bonfire of consciousness. We are God.
Okay, so so what you're saying is we're like individual manifestations and expressions of that creative force.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, and then how did you know? So back to this idea of how are you? What's your theory about? And I guess this is a major. Scientific theory is that, so you're saying that this Big Bang, is that how the world came into being?
Well, it's certainly how the universe came into being, yeah. I mean, that's something that is both accepted in astrophysics and in the spiritual traditions. And so it's pretty good evidence now that a Big Bang took place and that began the universe off
right.
running.
But was there like a causative force? Was the Big Bang the first cause, or was there a causative force prior to the Big Bang?
Now you've hit the $64,000 question, and the answer is nobody knows.
Uh-huh.
It's a huge mystery at this time, both on the theological side and on the astrophysical side.
Right, because on the theological side, they would say that there was still a creative force.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, I would agree with that, yes.
Yeah. And science, but again, you're saying science is really unclear about that, whether it was something prior to the Big Bang.
Yeah, well, the problem is that we can only run the equation of the physics backwards so far until we come back to the beginning, the Big Bang happens. But to go before that and say what was the cause of that, that gets us into trouble because scientifically you can't go there because you have no time to do that. Time itself is not a constant point, so how do you let something take place via causation if there's no time? It's a sticky wicket.
Right. So what, and you were concerned of kind of the response you would get in the science once this book was out, and how's that been in the scientific community?
It's only been out for a few weeks, so I don't really know much yet about that. And I am retired now, so I can write and say what I want to, which is a nice freedom to have.
Right.
So I suppose most of my colleagues are saying, well, I'm skeptical of this, and I don't blame them for that.
Right. But would you, I guess what you're saying is that your idea is more than a theory, that it's actual. I mean, what do you mean by proof? Because a lot of times, you know, you talk, I mean, some of the language is used in the, you're proposing is one word you use, and that's certainly not proof. It's more like, it's more like a theory. So are you saying that you have a theory, or I mean, what do you mean by proof? What exactly do you need to, what does proof mean in your world?
Well, and some of them are more proofy than others. There is, for example, a proof developed by a mathematician who was an old chum of Einstein's, and it goes on to 28 pages worth of logical equations and expressions, which is what philosophers try to prove something. Well, that was recently worked through by someone else using a modern analysis and shown to be correct. I mean, logically it's correct that I think Kirk Gödel is the guy's name. He arrived at a proof of God, but it's 28 pages of mathematics, so I don't think those proofs are very convincing. But that's one kind of proof. And then there are that are the same sort of argumentation, but of less volume. For example, St. Thomas Aquinas was the one who came up with proofs of God. St. Augustine did, and some others. But then when you get to the modern era today, there are facts in astrophysics that can be added to that list of examples of a proof. And I think the most important one we're discovering now is that the laws of physics are such as to make it very, very, very easy for life to evolve, to arise and evolve on planets. We're discovering now that there are lots of planets in the universe, a big surprise over 30 years ago, and that the laws of physics are such as to make it sort of a congenial place for, if the conditions are right, for life to evolve. So I think that between the philosophical proofs and the scientific ones, we've got quite a lot of evidence that there's an intelligence behind all of this.
Right. So coming back to, the significance is that that there's a creative force is, I guess the significance is that means that this universe wasn't an accident.
Yeah, that's right. I think it wasn't. And that's what I was alluding to when I mentioned the laws of physics being just right. Because there are a bunch of physics laws, about a dozen or so, ranging, for example, from the strength of the gravitational field to the strength of electricity to the properties of water, all sorts of things that have to be within a certain range to let life congenially evolve on the surface of a planet. And
right.
The discovery of these constants of nature is having that role to play. That's pretty new. It's come out in the last 20 or 30 years, and it's making quite an impression on people that understand the laws, understand the physics behind it.
Right. So, you know, the show, our show is called the Inspire Possibility Show.
Right.
And as you know, and what I'm wondering about is what about your discoveries that there's a God? What is that in your mind? Is that like inspiration to know that?
Well, yeah, it certainly is to me, because you know, I think that it makes it evident that, yeah, there's certainly a purpose in my life. If I am a spark of God, and you are, and so are all the other living creatures on the earth and perhaps elsewhere, then to know that what we're doing is gathering experience and bringing that experience back to our Creator, why, that's a jolly good purpose. I mean, I think it's a really good purpose.
So what you're saying is it kind of gives us more meaning in our lives and more purpose, is what you're saying?
Definitely. I think one of the biggest...
To know this?
I would say one of the biggest drawbacks of modern science is that it leaves people without a purpose. You know, I was a great fan of Carl Sagan, and he did some marvelous things, especially with the show called The Cosmos that was on about 30 years ago. It talks about the wonders of the heavens and all of this, and it's great, except for the fact that there's no real satisfaction in it or purpose in it for human beings. It's all just the grandeur of the universe, but where is the purpose for a human being? And unfortunately, I didn't find any in that. And so that's the problem you run across in science, that, you know, what we have to offer people is lots of intellectual knowledge and technology and all sorts of new gizmos and gadgets, but no purpose in life. That's very,
right,
very sad.
Right. And so I guess it reinforces, too, that there's an intelligent universe and that we're out there working for us, working on our behalf.
So, yes, it does sound kind of touchy-feely and abstract, but I think that's correct. The universe itself,
right,
is our home, and there may be some aspects of intelligence to the universe itself in some fashion.
Now, you wrote a book prior to this called The God Theory. Did I get that right?
Yes, that's right, yes.
And is there anything different? I mean, there you're talking about the God theory. Here you're saying proof of God. What is the difference between the two books?
Well, and they cover much of the same material, but there's a little more depth, I think, in the first one. I added my own biography and my life history, sort of. I mean, they're very similar topics. Yes, they are.
Right. You know, I got to say, I started reading the book a while ago, and what I really liked about it, it's very easy to read. I mean, you're talking about some very, you know, people think of a scientific book as kind of boring, or not boring, but just very heady.
Yeah.
And sometimes they have a problem, I know I do, kind of plowing through it. So I usually don't read them. But I think that the book was written in a very conversational way. I mean, makes it kind of more intriguing to read, and I would say to you out there. So, is this book available now in all the bookstores?
It's available in some bookstores, and also in Amazon. Amazon.com carries all three of the books.
Right. And when did the book come out?
Yeah, the book, the Proof of God, the name of the book, came out at the end of September. So it's this
uh-huh.
And the first book that you mentioned was theory, the God theory. So I have the God theory, and the Proof of God, and then another one in there that is the Purpose Guide. Yes, the Purpose Guided Universe. So I have three of them.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, kind of give you a broad view of this whole line of thought. So there you are.
Uh huh. So right now, what you're retired from your career. As an astrophysicist, and then you meet Ptolemy. How did you meet Ptolemy Tompkins?
Well, that was through a mutual friend. I was invited to go down to Mexico City for a conference. I gave a keynote address there, and one of the people that was also there was someone named Stephen Schwartz that I've known for a number of years. My wife did too.
Right.
And I was thinking about doing a rewrite of one of my books, and so we got to talking, and he recommended that I talk to Ptolemy Tompkins.
Right. Ptolemy helped Proof of Heaven, Evan Alexander, write that book?
That's right, yeah. He was deeply involved in that book. In fact, he did a lot of the writing of that book, and that was a huge success.
Right. Right, and he's quite acclaimed as a writer.
Yes, he's quite the writer, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess it's kind of great to kind of have somebody to, like that to work with, to kind of be able to kind of communicate your ideas better.
It does. It gives you, you know, a sort of a sanity check on what you're doing. You know, if you write something and you read it to your co-author and you go, what the heck is that? Then you know you've got to go back.
Right. What is that?
Yeah.
So is that kind of, what was your process of doing this together? How did that work?
Well, he did some preliminary writing for a few weeks, and then he had some marital issues and had to move out of his house. And so I invited him to come stay with me for a week or two out in California. He lived in the New York City area, and I live in California, in San Francisco area. So I said, well, Ptolemy, come on out. We've got work to do. You know, just jump on a plane and get out here. It's nice in California. And he did. So we had a lot of time to sit around and talk and, you know, serious stuff and frivolous stuff and everything that makes kind of a visit fun.
So what gives you hope right now?
You mean hope for the planet as a whole?
Yeah.
Well, I guess I would say it's the fact that there is growing interest in books like this. You wouldn't have found this sort of book, I think, 20 or 30 years ago. And
mm-hmm.
I think we're beginning to look beyond the rather static and time traditional sort of views of things to look at other possibilities, because what they've been given, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
Right.
Up in the sky somewhere. It makes no sense at all. It's illogical. You know, but if
right.
you get rid of the concept and replace it with a better one, that's an advance for the human race and gives us, I think, a better shot at
right.
making it to the future.
So in a way, it's what you're saying, I think, is that people are more open to possibilities, to alternative mm-hmm. ideas. And that's the way that we've evolved as a species and a planet, is that we're more open-minded, which is kind of the purpose of this show, is to help people open their minds more and to be open to new ways of thinking and to consider possibilities that previously they wouldn't have considered. So I want to thank you, Bernie, for being my guest on the Inspire Possibility Show, and to have you share some of your knowledge and your wisdom about the planet, the universe, and this concept that we refer to as God. So thank you very much. And to you out there, Remember, every week we have amazing people, amazing guests to kind of enlighten us. And next week be the same kind of thing. Somebody will be teaching us something, sharing something with us that perhaps will inspire us to think bigger and greater. So thanks so much, Bernard Haish, for being our guest on the Inspire Possibility Show.
Well, thanks again for having me. I really appreciated this.
It's our pleasure. And in the meantime, to you out there, journey on.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine.